Okay, now, as you know, the movement of planets, so many planets, onto your cross, the fixed cross, is new. Scorpio's had Saturn in it for a couple of years, but now there's, you know, counting, which I count as full planets, Vesta and Ceres, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 5, 6, 7, soon to be 8 planets in Leo and Scorpio. That's a big difference. That's a real sense of emphasis. And what it's doing is something very different than the planets have been doing with you and to you for the past few years, especially the first half of 2014, which is there's been a lot of energy loaded into the cardinal cross. And the cardinal cross is the one right behind yours. So, for example, Cancer is a sign right in front of Leo. And that's where the cardinal cross is oriented. So let's give another example. Scorpio, which I've been talking a lot about, that Libra is the associated cardinal sign right before that. Correspondingly, Capricorn is right before Aquarius. That's also on the cardinal cross. And then Aries is right before Taurus. That's on the cardinal cross. So the cardinal signs, a little bit of astrology theory here, the cardinal signs are situated in your chart in what are called the cadent houses. Those are houses 3, 6, 9, and 12. Those are maybe the strangest houses of them all because they represent processes that can be going on below the boards. They're not necessarily obvious. They don't always have immediate and direct manifestations in the world. Rather, they take time to percolate through. They're kind of like the cadent houses are like the fine filter of the zodiac. But what you have in the cadent houses is a lot of power in the form of the cardinal sign. So there's an inherent contradiction. And with all of this activity in the cardinal signs that's been going on for quite a while, but peaking in January and then April of 2014, it's almost as if there's been like it's like you live in a house that doesn't have any other apartments in it, but you sense that there's all this activity around you all the time, night and day. And you're wondering where all these sounds are coming from and where all of this sensation of bustling activity 24 hours a day is coming from. Well, where it's coming from is the cadent houses, places like the 12th house, places like the 3rd, or places like the 9th or the 6th. And so there has been this kind of desire for things to burst forward, burst out for quite a while. And now that planets are changing signs and moving into the fixed signs, you're getting that sensation of breaking free in some way, or a level of the tension bursting. Have you ever gotten a metal splinter that you couldn't get out, and the skin healed over the metal splinter, but unbeknownst to you, your body was working on gradually moving that splinter to the surface, and then one day it comes out and it hurts because it's breaking the skin, but then it feels so good because you know the splinter is coming out of your body and there's this little injury, but you know the little injury is just the final step in the healing process of your body magically, beautifully, intelligently pushing out this foreign object. That's one of the sensations of the planets moving from your cadent houses into your main cross, Leo Scorpio. Okay, let's consider some of those. First of all, the sign that Jupiter was in before it was in Leo was Cancer, and that was a large presence right on the other side of the veil. The 12th house is the most immediately accessible level of the astral plane. And therefore it's associated with dreams and certain types of trance experiences like drama and cinema, and that's where Jupiter has been. So there's been this sensation of all this potential. And that has now crossed the line into a more tangible, kind of aching to manifest form. Mars, for its part, has been in Libra. That's your third house. That is a lot of mental activity. That is, it's the sign that is the kind of like the cogitating mind that forms language, that likes to write and communicate. Mars has been retrograde there. It was retrograde from, I believe, March 1st to sometime in May. And then it was hanging out there for 8 months. That's some anxiety, also matched by Jupiter in Cancer, the 12th house. Anything in the 12th can be a source of anxiety. But as those planets moved, that provided some relief from anxiety and also the ability to have the anxiety be something besides conceptual or abstract, and rather to have it move into a conscious space where you can actually address the concerns. Now, there are two more slower moving pieces of the cardinal cross that are powerfully influencing your chart. And one of them is Pluto in Capricorn. Pluto in Capricorn is in your sixth house. And that's because Capricorn is your sixth house. And that's one of the ways that Leo, you know, when you'll read in Friday's edition of Planet, Thursday night's edition of Planet Waves, Aleister Crowley, who is a fantastic astrologer, describes Leo as this sign associated with the ability to work tirelessly. Part of why that's true is because Capricorn is on your house of work, which is the sixth, and now Pluto is there. And so, first of all, Pluto is granting energy, but it's also granting the drive to transform, the drive to change, the drive to expand through a kind of a, well, it's kind of like an internal expansion. Pluto moving through Capricorn reminds me of knocking down all the walls inside of a space that was cut up by lots of little rooms and actually seeing how big the space is. So it's, think of it as kind of an internal expansion that comes complete with the structure of your internal life changing, and that also relates to the internal structure of your relationship to work. The sixth also is about health, and so there are things you're needing to do to restructure your life around your health as well. I think that Pluto is likely to bring up any weaknesses that might be extant and show you the ways in which you have to get your health in order. These might involve two things mainly. Where Pluto is a factor affiliated with health, make sure that you're taking care of your hormones. Know what you eat and what you take, and know how that is influencing you in a way that has some impact on you hormonally. The second thing is to address the matter of your bones. Anything involving Capricorn will describe or be described by the bones. And Pluto coming through there is saying, it sounds a little like some chiropractic or osteopathic adjustment. That's sort of like the quality of that movement that is down to the skeletal level, the level underneath all the softer levels of the body. And yet, you know, bone cells are very much alive. And so there is a message there about taking care of your skeletal health, your posture. We could combine this with work and say your posture at work. How is your work environment influencing your health, especially matters of posture? This would be an awesome time, for example, to, you know, to invest in the ergonomic desk chair and to make sure that your work environment actually supports your health in a direct way. All right. Expect ongoing adjustments and changes. Now, let me just add one thing about that adjustment and change thing, because that is, you know, all over your charts in many ways. And being one born under a fixed sign, you might not, you know, be overly eager about living in a constant state of restructuring, but this is energy that you can harness. This is something that you can do something with because you know that it's going to happen. You know that wheel is turning, and you can grab a hold of that energy and apply it. It's a little like having a jackhammer that won't turn off, and you're like, well, I've got this thing, and it's making a lot of noise, and it's got a lot of power. What do I need to get out of the way? And so you direct that initially, potentially destructive energy of Pluto in Capricorn in constructive ways, for example, in the task of giving yourself more interior space, which, by the way, is also suggested by Saturn in Scorpio. And the two are resonating with one another because Pluto is so resonant with Scorpio and Saturn is so resonant with Capricorn, there is a vital process of attending to matters of both home and work, of security and emotional grounding and health. And it's kind of silly that so few people notice these relationships that, for example, you know, that the way their workspace is arranged might influence whether they feel safe and grounded on the planet, for example, or that emotional grounding influences productivity. You have to say these things. Some people figure it out. And it's one of the most, you know, powerfully drawn lines of connection in your chart. Connecting, again, the fourth, all these matters of grounding and emotions and home and family and work and the way that you want to change your work patterns, change your work environments, and then the way health is involved in all of these. And Jupiter in your sign is encouraging you to take the big view. Pull back and look at the whole scenario. If you drive to work, trace the route on a map that you drive to work. Stop and ask yourself, do you want to drive this many miles to work? Look at the biggest picture of the relationship between home and work that you can possibly see. And you may start to find that there are options that you have. You may be in an employment situation where you can work from home one day a week. That might be perfectly fine with your boss. You're very likely to be the person who gets so much done that you would be the first person that would be welcome to work from home. You may be moving towards some situation that is entirely based on home employment. That is worth considering now, and that can be viable. And one of the nice things about your inherent, what we'll call your structural constitution, is that you are someone who very likely has the discipline to make that be fully functional. Okay, let's go on to the role of Aries. Now, let's see, that is in your solar ninth house. Uranus is in Aries, but it's not the only thing in Aries. Let's orient this chart and see where we can get a good fix on this. Okay, so there are actually several slow movers in Aries. The two most famous are Uranus, part of the Uranus-Pluto square, and Eris, a new discovery discovered sometime around 05-06, named in 2006, and much great controversy resulting in the demotion of Pluto. That Eris, that is in Aries, that is in your ninth house. Now, the beauty of this ninth house is how restless it is, first of all. So there's a number of these influences that are restless influences, but it's a special kind of restlessness. It is what you could think of as a spiritual restlessness that is oriented on the sensation of wanting to self-actualize, of wanting to stretch into a more full spectrum feeling of who you are. The North Node is pointing there. There are eclipses coming through. This is likely to rise to crisis proportions a couple of times a year, where you just know that you've got to do more and be more. And on the one hand, well, it's very good that Saturn is holding you down to the ground, Saturn and Scorpio down in your fourth house. And on the other hand, I'm sure that you wish you could just get up and fly sometimes. And the desire, the drive, the need, the urgency to get up and fly, to be more, to feel more, to experience yourself as more is something well worth paying attention to. And I think this needs to be more than armchair travel. I think that whatever your family situation is, whatever your work or responsibility situation is, moving around the planet a little bit more, taking some long trips, getting away, spend some time in some other country if you can do it. If you can't spend time in some other country, go as far as you can go. Go to the next city. Get out of the local area. That's the third house. Go to something that is non-local. That's the ninth house. The ninth is about things that are foreign and distant. You know, if you live in New York, well, California is part of the ninth house because it's so far away. But we really start to get into the ninth house when we've gone outside of our own local city. So do it. Stretch. Go as far as you can go. If you live in Newark, go to Trenton. If you live in Trenton, go to, what's that place called? Princeton. How could you forget? Get to the next metropolitan area. If that's all you can afford, get on the bus and go there. If you can afford a plane ticket, find some friends somewhere who you haven't seen in a while and see what it's like in another place. If you're feeling especially lavish, you would have a lot of fun visiting some sacred sites somewhere, of experiencing something that is going to be directly inspiring of your consciousness. The purpose of travel, one of my spiritual mentors kind of mentioned this, and then I've seen it discussed lots of times by people who've made a point of traveling as a means of personal growth, is that it confronts you with yourself. When you go somewhere that's unfamiliar and that's alien to you, as in foreign, you're confronted by yourself because you're coming up against all these new experiences. You're engaging all these new people that you don't know. There might be a language barrier involved. You've got to get directions. All of that is meeting with yourself, and all of that builds confidence in who you are. And with Aries in the ninth, it's kind of another one of those glorious Leonine contradictions that is saying that encountering the unfamiliar is going to be the way that you become more familiar with yourself. And yet, with things like the North Node and Uranus and Eris in Aries, that idea of a self is in the midst of some huge revolution. So get out and about in the on the planet. Okay, let's cover the last of the fire signs, and then we'll move on and we'll look at some other signs and piece together more of this story. There's a couple of interesting things going on. First of all, there's one more fire sign left to cover. That fire sign is Sagittarius. Sagittarius is a sign that's associated with the house I just described, of all things foreign, international, distant, spiritual, higher self, an expanded concept of self beyond the sort of limited thing of, like, you know, what clothes do I wear? And hello, I'm Mr. Smith. I'm an insurance salesman. The ninth house in Sagittarius take that and they kind of explode that concept into something that is a little rare to get to, but you've got lots of it in your chart. And where Sagittarius itself is placed is in your fifth house. This is saying, inherently, just as a birthright, that one of the ways you grow spiritually, Sagittarius, is through art and sex. Not that hard to understand, but difficult for people to get to that, to think of, well, why, you know, I'm not that talented. Why should I do art? Well, then there's sex. Well, that's just something I, you know, do with my boyfriend or girlfriend. It's not really some special part of my life. It's not some special part of my evolution. It's just this thing that I do that's sort of this normal thing. Well, that may be true. However, with Sagittarius on the fifth house, there is a sense of adventure that is essential for you to have in your sexual life, and also to be bringing in a creative piece there. And it's with Sagittarius, it's going to be visual. I would think that something like some form of painting, regardless of whether or not you can actually, you know, draw a perfect looking kitty cat, the use of color, abstract painting would be great, but also photography is a very easy form of painting because you don't really have to set very much up. You just turn on the camera, you take some pictures. But I suggest you do this in a way that is bolder and more adventurous. Now, there is a group of planets in there in that fifth house, but they're not going to appear on 99% of astrology charts because they're all minor planets. There are things like Pholus, Ixion, Quaoar, other centaur planets, some galactic points that always stay there in our lifetimes. And what this is saying is that there is a, well, literally a universe of potential and energy that you can burst out of its little pockets by being more fully engaged as a conscious participant in art and sex. Get into the workspaces of artists. I don't know what you do, if it would ever occur to you to like visit, like in my community, there's a whole several of these transform factories that have become art studios. Sometimes these places open their doors. Sometimes there are craft fairs where all the people come out who, you know, all the local people and some from outside the area, and show the work they do, where you actually get to engage with the craftsperson. You might meet someone interesting there. First of all, go to them and don't just look at the merchandise. Talk to the people about their creative process. Get that onto the human level. Find out how they feel about their work. They're the people whose teacups I like to buy. I want the ones who are, you know, who if they don't aren't throwing pottery, they're going to feel like they're suffocating. That's the art that I want to have, because I want to have that kind of elemental human power in it. And see if you can find a way to get to these workspaces. You might have a friend who's an artist. This environment of where creation happens is, for you, central to your spiritual growth, that clue being Sagittarius, central to your staying an inspired person, but also because there's so much in this fifth house that does not have like legitimate name in astrology, because these plant points are mostly unused, mostly unknown, yet it's all there, all this material's there. So there is this discovery process that's going to happen. Now, this discovery process in Sag 5th is somewhat antithetical to the discovery process of Aries 9th, because Aries 9th is saying, get out into exterior spaces. Go far away to find what's interesting. What Sagittarius 5th is saying is stay close to home, look in interior spaces like art studios, art galleries, art openings, places where creativity is happening, and let that guide you in a way that is inwardly seeking. And so the two work together very well. They're not, they may be antithetical on one level, where one is pointing you out, one is pointing you in. One is about like a direct confrontation. Aries likes to kind of get in the face of whatever it's encountering and see what fun it can have. Conscious transformation and revolution, Eris and Uranus. But the fifth is saying, as you go in, as you seek your way inward into these creative spaces, you are going to make internal discoveries that also shift your consciousness. And ultimately, the thing this chart is saying is, and I think this is true for everyone all the time, so it's not like it's a special thing I'm saying here, but it is vividly illustrated in your chart. I believe that every home needs a specially designated place for art and a specially designated place for sex, not the bedroom, something else, some other spot. Like, there's the yoga corner people have, and people have their kitchen, and they've got their desk. They've got a specialized place to do work and a specialized place to eat lunch, call the kitchen table, specialized place to read a book, that special chair with the light. Well, two more specialized places to have. A place to create, which you can double over with, you know, maybe you keep, I mean, I have all my art supplies on my kitchen table. I'm a little freaky. And they're kind of always there. And when we eat, we just sort of push the paintbrushes and the pens to the back of the kitchen table and make some room for the food. Shows you where my priorities are most of the time. And the specially designated place for sex, because sex for you is a spiritual enterprise. We're going to get to that in one. Got a couple of more houses to cover. So the concept of sex as a spiritual enterprise means that it is about seeking your soul. If there's something where you seek your soul, that's a consciousness-raising activity. It is best not focused on a bed. Now, lots of people, pretty much everyone, unless you're one of these people who prefers to have sex in the supply room, which could be a lot of fun, most people have sex in bed. Even the term go to bed doesn't mean it's sleepy time, bring your teddy bear, put on your toed pajamas. It means fucking. But I believe that the sex vibe thrives places other than the bedroom. So I would propose that you designate a place in your life, wherever it might be. Might be someplace that you fold up when you're done and then set it back up, like in the middle of the living room. It might be an extra room in your home. It might be the attic. There might be like this nice attic that's not too dusty and creepy, and you can throw a futon up there. Have a specially designated place for the focused activity of sex. While we're on the thought of sex, and we're going to pick up that thought in the eighth house, to have Sagittarius on the fifth house, which is what you have, the fifth being the kind of fun dimension of sex, this is describing a philosophical approach to sex. Now, I can hear the peanut gallery, the giggles coming up from the peanut gallery. Really? Hooking up? Philosophy? What's that got to do with Socrates? Well, the Leo charts are all about a philosophical approach to all things creative and all things sexual, based on the overwhelmingly lovely influence of Sagittarius pumping through that house. And this is saying, read some stuff about sexuality. There are some fantastic books about sexuality. I don't have a proper reading list. I might want to do that, huh? I have like my top 20 reading list. But among my favorites are the book Sexual Secrets, Eros Denied, The Joy of Sex by Alex Comfort. Let me see if I can pull together a short reading list. But the reading list would focus on the intentional aspect of sex, on the spiritual aspect of sex, which is becoming more popular, concepts of relationship. Leo needs a lot of room in its sex life. I know that there's a lot of very bonded, monogamous type of Leos where it's stability and all this, but the truth is you need space around your sexuality. You need the freedom to imagine. You need the freedom to experiment. You're a bit of an adventurer. I understand this doesn't necessarily go along well with monogamy, but I don't think that monogamy, the way that it is imposed on people right now in this bizarre compulsory, unconscious form is a very useful form of monogamy. And whether or not you are or aren't, or think you are or think you aren't monogamous, Sagittarius on the fifth house is saying you need space in your sex life. You need ideas in your sex life. Two very crucial things. And there's lots being written now about expansion of this space. There's a beautiful article on currently on the cover of the Planet Waves blog. And the article, I don't have that window open because I'm recording audio and I keep my windows closed for recording audio. But let me link to this article by this fantastic writer whose name evades me right now. And the article is about whether people get jealous when their partner masturbates. And the stroke of genius, pardon the pun there, of this article is that the author has figured out that the controversial thing about masturbation is fantasy. Now, I tried to crack this puzzle for decades, and finally I did figure out what it was. Why is masturbation controversial? Who fucking cares? Ah, the reason masturbation is controversial is, well, who are you thinking about? Is it me or is it someone else? And this author has blown the whistle on this issue, saying, please, get over it. Who cares who your partner thinks about? Do you really have to be the sole source of all their sexual inspiration? And more to the point, in your chart, which has Sagittarius here, you need to be a free-range chicken on the psychic level, on the emotional level. You need the freedom to think and feel and want and to construct a version of reality that suits you, not about suiting someone else. Then the relationship follows suit. The relationship follows along with that. See my logic here. All right, let's take this concept up to the eighth house. There are several houses where sexuality and relationships intertwine in a powerful way. The fifth puts sex first and relationships follow along. The eighth should put sex first, but usually it puts relationships first because it's the house of the contract of the relationship, and the sex follows along. But what I find about the eighth house is that it doesn't work the way it's supposed to in theory, like a lot of things in life, where the deeper, particularly in your case, emotional cravings of sexuality are the thing that is the most prominent in the eighth house. And then there's the matter of the relationship agreement. Now you have Pisces on the eighth house. So on your second house associated with your sexuality so far in this discussion, there's a few others, you have another sign that wants a lot of space. Of the 12 signs in the zodiac, two are associated with wanting a lot of space. Sag and Pisces. They want to expand. And you have Pisces on the eighth house. Now, the beauty of Pisces on the eighth house is that there is a profound understanding and an affinity for the, let's call it the mystical agreement, the mystical contract. Does not necessarily need to be spoken. There is an understanding that there is more than one lifetime involved. And the beauty of Pisces is that it is the delta of Venus. It is the ultimate river delta of the zodiac. All rivers flow into Pisces. And you have this in your eighth house. This is saying that you have a very expansive psychic region, emotional region in your life where you can share very deeply. This is a resource. It is an asset. It is a beautiful thing. It is possibly something that makes you nervous because it's so different than all the rules, all the conditioning, all of the things that we're supposed to do. And at the same time, as it has this vastness to it, there is also a deep sentimentality associated with Pisces, a need for emotional contact, for touch, for the actual expression of trust and love. And you have this all the time. And what it creates is a ginormous conduit to others and for others to come into you. It's almost like the concept of the commons, the common space that all of us share is best described in Pisces. And you have this in the part of your house, part of your chart that is about sharing in one-on-one bonds. But that space is much larger than a one-on-one space, but you can still have that focus of one-on-one relationships. Now, and all relationships ultimately are one-on-one. No matter how polyamorous someone is, they still have one-on-one relationships. And no matter how monogamous someone is, they still have relationships other than with their primary. So there's a lot of denial about and fake controversy on this monogamy versus polyamory thing. I think that it's at least half bullshit, because polyamorous relationship patterns and monogamous relationship patterns have much more in common than most people want to admit, because it's controversial. But why don't we just admit it, that no relationship exists in a vacuum? There's always other people around. There's always a community around the relationship. And that no matter how polyamorous someone is, there is always a central focus on one-on-one bonding. So I think these definitions don't really do a very good job of containing what they're supposed to contain. And you might especially feel this way having Pisces, which does not like to be described or contained. It's not really possible to describe or contain that much water. Now, there are some magnificent planets gathered in Pisces right now, and they are having what I would call a deep influence on your relationships. One of them is Neptune. Neptune is not exactly the most practical, but it's certainly one of the most pleasant energies, especially placed in the eighth house in Pisces, that is stoking your imagination and your idealism, and also assuring that the relationships that have lasting value are the relationships where there is a, what I will, for lack of better words, call a mystical bond with the person. You have always wanted this, but now that Neptune has showed up in Pisces fairly recently, and it's going to be there for a while, this mystical bond idea has some, I don't want to call it exactly substance, even though Neptune does have substance in the form of water, but it has a presence. Next is Chiron, focusing the point of contact. Now, Chiron does many things. First of all, it craves experience. And so if Neptune is stoking fantasies, Chiron in Pisces is saying, yeah, that's a nice fantasy. Let's see what this is really like. And so there may be a craving to actually experience things. And I have my stock and trade sexual advice. One point is that if you are doing this transposition from fantasy to reality, to give it time, give it a few chances. The common one is everybody on the planet fantasizes about having sex with more than one person at once. If there's not anybody who hasn't, I'd really like to meet them and find out what's going on. But for example, That's a very common fantasy. Okay. Then people try it, and it's like, it's not as easy as they thought. It's not as much fun. It might be awkward. They don't necessarily know what they're doing. Somebody might get jealous. Okay. But don't make up your mind based on that. Maybe debrief the experience, get together, find out, talk it over with your partner, try it again. Or if you tried it with one partner, try it with the next partner and see what happens. Give it 3 or 4 times. Any time you want to transpose something from the realm of fantasy to the realm of experience, there is an adjustment, and it's a different experience. In fantasy, you've got total control. There are no practicalities to deal with, you know, unless, you know, there's like a lot of noise in the next room and you can't get your imagination going. There are no practicalities involved with fantasy. You can completely transcend all of the basic needs, including, you know, who the person is and whatnot. But when it comes to physical reality, something more described by Chiron, then you have to take care of the details. The beauty of approaching the eighth house in Pisces this way and making that transposition from fantasy to reality is that it has healing value. You will see your relationships for what they are, and in particular, you will be compelled to understand the nature of the agreement, right? Because this is often an unconscious thing, the nature of the agreement. Once you start experimenting, the agreement becomes very important and can show you all the boundaries in the relationship. You can start to see all the numerous ways that there are limits, that there are places that are open that you didn't discover, there are divergences where you thought you had common ground or where you didn't think you had common ground. You might find there is a total overlay. I met a couple at Burning Man a few years ago. They were the woman, I think, was in her late 60s. The guy was in his early 70s. They're the people who've made the whole issue about how the word polyamory is a Greek root and a Latin root, and you can't mix a Greek and a Latin root. They're kind of funny. All right, so they were closeted to each other their entire marriage. This goes on like 30 years. Finally, when they were getting a little old, they realized that they were both polyamorous. Now, is that beautiful, ridiculous, interesting, exciting? Now, skipping over whether this is polyamory or not, but that's not the only thing that can be affected here, but this is a way of showing how the truth can have a beautiful effect. You need to know where you stand with yourself and where your partner stands with himself and herself. And one of the best ways to do that is to be real, is to experiment with that contractual area of the eighth, which for you is also this vast common ground of Pisces, now with planets in it, particularly Neptune and Chiron, one of which is saying, use your imagination, Neptune, another one of which is saying, try that. See what that's like. Engage that experience. Think about the necessity for sexual healing. Let's skip the whole relationship thing altogether and experiment with the equation of Chiron plus Pisces plus eighth adds up to a concept of healing your sexuality. To do that, you need to be real with yourself. You need to have self-understanding. You need to be willing to question an agreement with another person, an agreement with yourself, or more likely, bring that agreement to a level of self-awareness and see if that really works for you. So there's going to be different forums where you can experiment with this, and I don't think that relationships are the best place to do therapy. I'm not even a big fan of couples therapy, since really all therapy ends up being individual. There is no couple to have the therapy, even though some people think there is. It's really an individual, it's a bunch of individual relationships. But give this a try, I would say. and this relates back to the read a little bit, learn a little bit concept of Sagittarius in the fifth, of expand your base of ideas, get this orient yourself in a universe where ideas grow, where they're living things, where the concept of relationship is not a fixed concept, that you have to live in a way of being constantly predisposed to that fixed concept, but rather see what happens if the concept is a moving concept. And one of the best ways to do that is, first of all, through expanding your knowledge base by reading, and then by expanding your knowledge base through experiences, both of them. All right, let's poke around a little bit here and see. Let's end with a discussion of Silent Noonan. Okay, so speaking of relationships, let's orient the chart with Leo in the first house, Aquarius in the seventh house. That's your opposite sign, Aquarius. And that, by the way, is Aquarius, by the way, is the sign of groups, and you have the sign of groups on your seventh house. And that is saying that the group context of relationships for Leo is one of the most meaningful concepts that there is. And I'm going to add my article, The One and the Many, to this. I cover that in an article, the one where I debunk the difference between polyamory and monogamy by saying that every relationship is a one-on-one relationship, and every relationship is set within a group context. Whatever you choose to do, whoever you choose to have sex with, really, we all have to deal with the one-on-one thing and the group thing, and Leo gets the group thing really strongly because of its association to Aquarius. And there's some interesting bits moving around Aquarius right now. In particular, there is Damocles, which is almost always in Aquarius, but what's exciting is that that the moon is about to be full, very close to Damocles. And then there is Sappho in Aquarius, and Sappho brings groups together. That's a beautiful thing about Sappho. It's not just about lesbianism. Some astrologers say it's not about lesbianism at all. I have seen quite the contrary. Doesn't mean it. Asteroids can show up one way in one chart, another way in another chart. But let's take the asteroid Sappho as being the camaraderie piece, the group piece, same-sex grouping of some kind, hang out with the girls, hang out with the boys sometimes. Yeah, there's the, yeah, you know, a little bisexual experimentation enriches every lifetime. That's not the main thing I think that that Sappho was saying, but it's certainly not denying that. And the full moon is about to sweep through Aquarius and bring a lot of mojo onto the Leo-Aquarius aspect all at once. And that's in emphasizing this somewhat polarized quality in your charts, where there's tension between that possibility and that possibility. That's been a theme of many of the things I've been describing. But what I think the most interesting thing about this full moon is doing is that it is directly in aspect to a point that I've only mentioned once in print and only in a cursory way, and I'll be doing more of it through the week and possibly in, and let's see, what day is this? Yeah, I'm going to have one more issue of Planet Waves to cover this in, the Thursday, the 7th issue. And that is the point called Silent Noonan. It is a binary. It has a 290-year orbit, so it's out past Pluto. It is considered a classical Kuiper object, which is to say that it is a member of the Kuiper belt, as is Pluto, but it's in the second tier. There's a group that have 250-year orbits. All of those are named after gods of death and the underworld. The next tier out is planets at around 290 years orbiting the sun, a little under three centuries. They are all named for gods of creation and resurrection. So there's kind of the death level, the death and underworld level, that's Pluto. And now, thankfully, we've discovered planets beyond Pluto. We can get to the creation and resurrection part of the cycle of the cosmos. Silanunum is named for Inuit deities of spirit and matter. So that Silanunum bonds those two concepts together, the matter and the spirit, which is a perfect way to think of Leo, because it is so much about materializing out of the etheric. It is about kind of a coalescence of things. And I've been watching Silanunum move through Leo for a long time, and I haven't quite had the words to describe it. But what I like about Silanunum as a function of Leo is that it's about bridging heaven and earth, when you think about it. And I think of it as describing this beautiful way in which Leo can stretch itself across the seeming contradiction of spiritual versus material, and not only bond them, but make them into something entirely new. All this other interesting stuff buzzing around in Aquarius, your opposite sign, especially Damocles, is saying you would probably be happier if your relationships were a little more edgy. And by edgy, I don't mean pointless drama. By edgy, I mean less predictable, more willing to take risks, and more supportive of your partner in taking some risks. You have very edgy charts right now. You're described as being restless, as seeking new things almost all the time, of being exceedingly curious about yourself, and of having a very high capacity for experimenting with the potential that relationships have. Relationships of all kinds, be they collaborative, romantic, sexual, known by others, not known by others, familial relationships, and every factor in your chart is saying you need to be pressed up against, verging into, perhaps allowing yourself occasionally to thrust into totally unfamiliar territory, and bring back the experience, debrief it with the people around you, debrief it with yourself in your journal or in your art, but then also share with people who you share that experience with what it was like for you, and maybe consider what you want to do next in a conscious way. All right, well, for Section 1A, Afterthoughts on Section 1, I've now gone on for 53 minutes, so I'm going to call it a session. This has been a fun and intriguing little journey, mainly through the 5th and the 8th houses, though I've covered quite a few houses. And I'll be back in the next section with some astrology afterthoughts and a reading of the Voyager Tarot by Dr. Jane Wallace. Okay, bye for now.